Reels Reel 2. You went from the first job to this other. What were you doing there?
Oh, right. Well, what happened? I heard through a relative who was in the motor trade. He said, look, he says, there's a job going at Pyatt's tyre fitting. So if you go up there and ask for Jack somebody, anyway, I've forgotten his name, and he was running it while with the war being on, and he set me off straight away as a tyre fitter. To learn me to tyre fit, which I picked up very easy. I loved it because it was very manual and physical. I loved that because it helped develop me. Most everything was every job you did, you know, I enjoyed. And I used to, I always remember, because that was when I was doing weightlifting, and it was, I think, Jack introduced me to the British champion weightlifter at middleweight, and he came from Madeley. His name just goes away from me at the moment, but he gave me a few tips on weightlifting and encouraged me, and he said, you keep at it, you've got the stamina, you've got the sort of interest, anyway. And at work, as I say, lifting these heavy tyres, I mean, I've seen the time that, they were heavy tyres. I mean, some of these big tractor tyres were very heavy because you have to carry them up two flights of stairs to store them. And of course, I got the point. I mean, everything was a challenge. I mean, and I loved it. I mean, lifting tyres, lifting the weights, struggling with the, struggling, I mean, just bodybuilding, continuous, really, I suppose.
And what was the wage?
I moved for 12 and 6 months. So from, I probably made two bob or 2 and 6 months, I think, on the...
Were the hours better than the shop?
Oh, yes. I mean, I used to start at 9, but I always went to 8:30. So I had to cycle to work, because that was, again, another kid fit thing. And I used to do my training on a morning. I used to get up at 7 o'clock, do my training every day on the trapeze and skipping and weightlifting every morning. And then go to work and do some more. And Jack treated me like a little adopted son, really. And I got on very well with him. And I remember, he was right. Actually, a bit of a rogue, really, Jack was. But he taught me a few things. And I always remember my cousin who was a... He wasn't in the army. He was Newcastle Staff's motor company, and they probably sent him to jail. But never mind. He used to get hold of Newcastle Staff's motor company, a very old established company in Newcastle on the Lyme, and he was either foreman or something. And he used to get vehicles used to break down, which are probably army vehicles, and he used to have to sort of impound them. But before they did that, they brought them to our place about the tyres and think, get them fitted. But in the meantime, Jack would get me to take off tyres and swap them for old tyres while he was entertaining my old cousin but this is part of the war after this. And he would be entertaining my cousin to a cup of tea and coffee and I suppose a bit of chat. I'd never always done because I was taking all the damn tyres off the cars. And put them back on, because never twigged ever what happened. And this went on for, must have gone on for a year. And at the end of the day, Jack would come to me and say, you know, he's a pound for you, a couple of quid. Well, I mean, that was a lot of money then. And I'd get a quid out of the deal for a fan bob a tyre or whatever it was. And probably a pound, I'm probably exaggerating, if I said 2 quid. But, I mean, that pound was more than my wages, so I mean, really, that happened once a week. It was quite good. By this time, I was making quite a little nest egg, you see.
Did you hand your money to your mother?
Always give me my wages. And she used to give me probably about 2 and 6 months back. But I was always a saver. And I always liked to deal. And I always remember an old boy. He was in the local workhouse. And the first time I met him was... he must have been a fella. I mean, man, as I say, I could be well out on my years because as a young lad, I thought he was extremely old. But anyway, he must have been an engineer of some sort, because the first time he walked past the garage or the tyre fitting place we had, he asked me if he could have a glass of water, as he didn't feel very well. And he had a white flowing beard, I always remember him. And it was a bitterly cold day. And I said to him, well, this man, Jack, my boss, was very good. I said, would you like a hot cup of tea? He said, well, it won't get you in trouble, young man. I said, no, I'm sure it won't, but I'll ask my boss first. And he said, go on, you do what you want to do. So anyway, I made him a cup of tea. And every week afterwards, he used to always come. And one day, he gave me a homemade cigarette lighter. And they used to make them out of anything, like, might be a menthol tin. It might be a round, a 303 rifle shell. And this got into quite a good little business. He dropped me about half a dozen off a week. I would give him probably, I think I used to give him ninepence for them. I'd go down my aunt, on my way home, I'd pop into Aunt Polly's, who's my favourite auntie, and they had a milk round business, and Uncle Bill, as a character, his horse and cart used to pull up outside of every pub on his way round, and he would take off as many lighters I could give him in a week, which would probably be about half a dozen. He'd give me a shilling for them. Probably one of six or two bob in the pub. And this was another little business we got going. And all this money kept getting in my bank account in the building society. And I was quite well off, really, I suppose, really. And then the big deal came up one day. There was a Lloyd's Biscuits, I think they called this one. He's a bit of a guy who used to sell broken biscuits on the market. And he built himself up until he did all the local markets, because he was, I think he must have been, he couldn't have been in the army anyway. He probably had a medical problem. But anyway, he got quite a big business. He used to have about 10 guys working for him. And this one day, this driver come up to me and he said, Charles, have you got £75? I said, what? £75? Anyway, he said, well, I've come across 100 pairs of shoes, and they're wedge heeled, and they're all in American sizes. Anyway, I can't remember the amount of money I gave him, but it was a lot of money, and I bought the lot off him. Now, I found out later he was a conscious object. That upset me, because, I mean, you know, everybody had to fight for the countries, you know. And this upset me. Never mind. This guy sold me all of these shoes, and he's quite a tidy man, because I went down the, when I took them home, I got them delivered by Jack, who didn't know it was in the boxes, because they were all in, and I put them in our tool shed, and nobody knew about these. And my mother was, I said, oh, pick these up, and she'd take them to the munitions factory and sell them for probably 10 bob a pair. Well, I made a fortune, I did, really.
These were the years leading up to and into the Second World War.
That's right.
As a basically teenager and those years, do you recall the problems that were possibly on the horizon from Germany? Not really.
I mean, I was just really wishing away the years to fight for your country and do your bit, you know, and fight the Germans, you know, really. Because I think the, you know, I'm older now looking at it, but I think they went rattling the sabres long enough, you know, and I've changed a lot, obviously, over the years, but I think really we were all ready to, well, we're old enough to really get there and do your stuff, and that was it. I can't say I knew anything politically at all.
Do you recall where you were and what you were doing when Chamberlain made his speech?
No. All I knew is, right, we're going to sort the Germans out. That must have been the ripe old age of 13 and a half. No, that's right. I mean, I might have just left school. I don't know. I can't remember.
What was happening in those early months of the war around you?
I think just excitement, really, to be fair. I mean, well, we're going to fight the Germans again, you know, and that was it. You know, I mean, Rick, I don't forget, I mean, we were only It must have been nice to have been really intelligent and to know, but I'm quite honest, we just want to fight the Germans. Don't like the Germans.
As you got nearer to military age, your mother must have been a little bit worried. Your husband had suffered.
Yeah, I think Mum did worry. And I think this is probably, but mind, I must say, my mother hated me boxing. She said, "You're taking after your dad's side. And, you know, this is really something." And then I remember one occasion that Harry, my cousin, the one I was telling you about, spoiled a bit. And he used to make some daft bets for me. Like, I remember one bet he had with me was I couldn't eat this amount of ice cream. And it was about half a gallon or maybe a gallon. But I know it was a big tub full. And he bet me half a crown I couldn't eat it. And I did. I had no taste for months. But I won me half a crown. But the other one, the one that stood out in my mind, was a bottle of sherry. And he bet me half a crown again. I couldn't drink it. And I drank it. And when my mother come pick me up, because she'd gone out to do something, she was working in the shop in the front, because she worked for my aunt in the front shop. And when they come to take me home, my stepfather came with her. And I'd be about, I should think I'd be about 14 then, probably about 14. And my mother looked at me and she just slapped me across the face, 1, 2, 3, 4. And all I did was grin like a Cheshire cat. And my stepfather said, "Now come on, he's only a lad. They've been silly. Come on." And I always remember them. I walked in between my mum and my stepfather, my arm through both of them. And they walked me through the And of course, in them days, we used to go pick the meat up last thing at night on a Saturday night, probably 9:30, 10 o'clock. And you always got all the, they had no refrigerator in them days. And we used to buy the meat then and all the way down. And always remember, when we got home, I think my mum was ready to give me another smack again. And my stepfather said, "Now stop it. Because he's only done it once." She said, "Well, yeah, but look at it." And the next day, I remember on the Sunday, Mother got up and she said, and she told me this afterwards. She says, "I did you bacon, tomatoes, an egg for your breakfast. Cooked it for you. And you eat it." And she says, "I was hoping you're going to be sick of the doctor if you use that." He said, "Yeah, no. Hang on, we know nothing." And she went on, she says, "I always remember saying, you're growing up like your father, a drunken something," I can't remember the word she used, "drunk for something." And I said, "Look, Mum, I'll never ever drink again. If that's what it does to you, I'll never drink again." And I didn't. And I said to her, I always remember on my wedding day, my mother said, "You should drink a toast." I said, "Mum, I promised you I'll never drink." So I go, "There it goes with. Now you want me to drink, now you don't want me to drink. So make your mind up." And that was on my wedding day. And she was, but she that was it.
Early war days, were you bombed in the area?
Yes, we were. There's a place called Cheston where later I opened a photographic business there, a studio. But that was after the war. But during the war, that was bombed, and the local cinema, it was a terrible tragedy, was on a Saturday afternoon, and of course the place was full of school children and whatever. And I don't think there was many houses in that village that didn't lose somebody. And that was and it was a bomb that just wiped out and set fire. But I don't remember much of it, but I always remember it was a terrible tragedy.
Were you still living in the same house?
No, we then moved into 72 Orme Road, which we lived in for a lot of years. I went to the army and got married and everything.
Did you have the Anderson shelter?
Oh, yes, we had the Anderson shelter, yeah. Well, my stepfather was only a little guy, but terribly strong, and, he was, if he covered 7 stone, I think that'd be about where he was, but he was terribly strong. I mean, he's the sort of guy that would, he had to prove, with him being small, that he was good, and everywhere he worked, everybody thought the world of him. I mean, he used to work on a building site, and when I was 15 or 16, 17, he would bring probably an Irishman, a young Irishman home, to go in the ring with me, and I said some terrible wallops, I'm telling you, but my mind, I think with a bit of experience, was quite, you know, quite, I sold me on. And he slipped me off a crown for a good fight.
Many of your acquaintances, if not friends, would be in the forces.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And going off to wherever.
Yeah.
Do you recall the Dunkirk situation?
Well, I mean, just recall the tragedy of it, you know, and that's it. But as far as in depth, I don't think kids are out of time, really. Unless you're well educated. See, it was never really discussed to me, really. I mean, I had nobody to talk to. I had no brothers. My stepfather was fairly illiterate. Well, he was illiterate. There was no kid on it. And in fact, I never knew that he couldn't read. But he'd read the papers as far as football results and things. But he was still a very kind man. He always tried to give me, I think, what he thought the father should do. You know, I mean, he'd do the impossible things. He'd build your, he'd say, a boxing ring in the garden. Nobody else had one. I had one. He built me a trapeze in the garden. Nobody else had one. But then again, it's the sort of thing that he could excel at, was boxing, a trapeze. I mean, he's the only man I used to see pull himself up with one arm 50, 60 times. And really, and when you think his arms is just like that, I mean, the only.
Do you think that boxing and, you know, the discipline of boxing helped you in later life, particularly in the army? When
you I think really, I think me keeping fit, really. I think, see, as I said to you, I mean, at 11 or 12, I joined the Health and Strength. I think it was about 11 I joined the Health and Strength League, which was really something a kid didn't do. You know, I mean, but I think being in this environment, really, I suppose, really.
Did this physical activity take the place of the normal teenage girls and dancers?
I must admit, I like girls. I mean, the first girl I kissed, I always remember Dora, somebody. And I always remember giving her a kiss and then running. Just give it a kiss and then run the gun. I mean.
You didn't attend the dancing cinema scene, did you?
No. I think in the army is the only time I did be dancing cinema, but never until I would be. I think the first dance I went to, I'd be about probably 19, 18, something like that. Yeah, I mean, no, never a dancing man.
At what point did you realise that you were going to go into forces?
Well, I mean, you become 17 and a half, 17 and three quarters. In fact, I think I actually volunteered to be 17 and three quarters. Oh, because I think what they did, I think you got a letter. Now, I could be wrong, I'm pretty sure. I think you could either go as a Bevan boy or in the army. No, I think I don't think I know I did. I would have been in the army.
And what year was this?
Gosh, I'll have to think that one out.
17 and a half years
old. Seven and three quarters, that's right.
And they were taking them as early as that. You were getting your, in effect, your...
Well, no, you got it on the 18th birthday, really. But I think we were about 73 quarters. I think then they started to move, you know what I mean, about 3 months after you were in, on the dot.
And this was conscription, was it?
Oh, yes.
So you're...
Well, I think we sort of volunteered, really, because I couldn't get in quick enough, really.
So you were looking forward to it?
Yeah.
Any thoughts of the danger that may be lying in the...
I think the thing, you know, I think what worried me more than anything was I would have reacted at the sight of blood. That's the only thing I remember. I mean, physically, I didn't care for... Physically, I didn't fear anybody. And I think I was so sure of myself, you know. Not cocky, because I didn't smoke, I didn't swear, and I didn't drink. I certainly... don't tell dirty jokes, and I still don't. Because, you know, it's funny this, you know, because I never, ever... I always thought telling a dirty joke was talking about my mother. And I know it sounds corny these days, but that's a God's honest truth. And mind, I'm not ashamed to say that in front of anybody. I say, I love my mother. Because my mother gave me everything. She gave me all the inspiration that I wanted. I wanted to be rich because of me, mum. I want to help my mum. And I always knew I was going to be comfortable. And I knew there's only one way I was going to do it, and that's to work for it. And that's how I feel. I mean, and I think I had this wonderful sense of my mum was always, if you play fair, at the end of the day, things work out. If you're bad, something's going to come back and take you. And I think by this way I got the nickname of the Prosser's son. Because I was in fear. It sounds daft. I mean, even now I think, is there a God? Is there not a God? And I think, well, I'll play safe. I'll still say my prayers. I do say my prayers every day. Always have done.
Going into the forces, or coming up to go into the forces, were you driven by a patriotic zeal to defend?
Oh, yeah. I must admit that. I've always been a royalist man. All my family were. I mean, Aunt Polly's tell me all about, because my favourite auntie used to tell me about the, you know, we love the royalty. And we could say the word love, which was something. Although we weren't all religious, don't get me wrong. I'm not terribly religious. But I believe in being fair. And but that's my mother. I mean, that's my mother. No getting away.
So you got your letter of communication to join, and it was the army that you wanted to go in from the very beginning?
Well, no, I was in the ATC for a little while. I hadn't got many, good grades. I'd be about 16, because I was in their boxing team. That was right, yeah. I was in their boxing team. Now I love that.
How was it organised?
Well, they just had groups that used to operate from, I think there was one in each town, and I think the one we was in was the Newcastle staff one, which was operated from the old boys school where I attended at the final when I left school. And that version, and I always remember we used to fight the Trenton boys, Eccleshall, Stoke. That's where I had a memorable fight with a lad from Stoke. And
these were all ATCs in
other towns? Yeah, ATCs in other towns, yeah.
Were they attached to the county regiment? I
don't think so. I think they were just groups that prepared to go in the Air Force. You know. But I ain't got the brains, man. I mean, I couldn't keep up with the maths or anything like that. You know. Not that I can ever remember them doing it. I think mainly what we did do with the Morse code and things like that, you know.
And were you issued with a uniform?
Yes.
What did they issue you with?
Well, just a sort of blue uniform, really, you know, very roughly wear, you know. There was nothing really.
Yeah. And how often during the week did you meet?
Once a week.
And that was night time, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Did you do drills?
Yes.
And that was a typical military drill,
didn't you? Yeah, typical, but I think. Shower, really. I mean, I was never any good on the playground, me. I'd never got nothing on the playground. No. Oh, that way didn't interest me so well.
Drills, and
I think it was aircraft identification, which I was no good at anyway. And certainly was no good at maths and Morse code, which I wasn't really good at that either, come think about it. I think in general, I think it was. That's about basically what it did, I think. I think they did a little bit of writing here and there, I mean, on, you know, a bit of composition sort of thing, but nothing really that many. I can't really remember anything that was really, except I wasn't very good in any of them, to be truthful.
Who was running it?
That is something I can't remember that. I think, in actual fact, yes, I can remember now. Actually, most of them were actually school teachers. Because we had Lanky Holland, I remember him. Because he was about 6'4", I always remember him.
And were these too old for the forces for the Second World
War? No, I think they're probably medically unfit or something like that, you know.
How did you take the discipline?
Good, I did as I was told, and if they went over an assault course, I had to be first. Nobody had to pass me. That was important. I mean, physically,
and you mentioned parades, that you weren't much good on the parade.
Oh, I mean, no. I was no worse than anybody else.
How often did you have parades?
Oh, probably every night we went. I mean,
important duties to perform?
No, no, no. Oh, sorry, yes, hey, yes. When I was working for Pyatt, yes, I used to do one night a week. Yes, I used to get paid for that. I used to sit there all night on my own. And then again, that's what's really been in a bit of a place of being 16 on your own in a big place like that, you know, which could have been somebody come and nick anything or whatever, you know. That's what's really, when you think about it, it's quite daunting, you know, for a 16-year-old. You know, being locked in a place, you know.
Had the nature of your work changed in any way with the war coming along? Were you doing war work?
No.
When I say war work, I think tires for military vehicles, this kind of thing. Were you involved in that kind of thing?
No. Well, tires, yes, we used to fit tires for them. That's how we used to get these odd new tires and swap them all for old tires, you know, and they'd drive away. We'd have the new tires.
Where did you report to when you?
No, wait a minute, that was at Gloucester.
And was it RAF? Were you still interested?
No. Army, I went into it in the end. I don't think it had any brains, to be honest with you.
You were quite happy with going into the army.
Well, no choice, really.
They told you where they're going around.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, they probably thought I was too thick. I knew for the Air Force, anyway.
That must have been a pretty worrying time for your mother to know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yes, oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Very worrying.
How far away is this place that you reported from your home?
Well, I suppose it'd be about 250 miles away from
me. Oh, Newcastle,
Gosforth. See, this is how I ended up in the Durham's because of me thinking there's only one Newcastle in the world, that's Newcastle on the line.
So you reported, and you've got your letters and so forth, and you told the report up here?
That's right, did 6 weeks up here.
And was this a general unit, a general...
Yes, General Service Unit, I think they called it, didn't they? With the Northumberland Fusiliers, yeah.
Do you recall whereabouts in Gosforth it was?
Well, no, it's just, I think, just the army barracks they want there, I guess so. It was a barracks then. That's right, isn't it? Brussels.
Northumberland
Fusiliers, anyway, that was it.
Was it the barracks in Newcastle then?
No, it wasn't in Newcastle. No, it was definitely Gosforth, though. It was Gosforth. Because I always remember travelling up with a guy from, who was a milkman, actually, Harry Kettle. He travelled up with him from Stoke up to...
I was thinking of Fenham Barracks.
Ah, right. No, not the Fenham Barracks. No, definitely.
When you got there and reported, how did they receive you? The moment you walked through those gates.
You're in the army now. You're in the army now, boys. You're in the army now.
There were quite a number of you.
Oh, yeah, I think there'd be about probably... about 100, something like that, yeah. I could be wrong, but it just seemed a lot to me, you know, really. I mean, there'd be about 30 in a... No, there would, there'd be 30, because, I mean, there's a photograph in there of the...
Have you been medically examined before this?
Oh, yes, medically examined, yeah.
Do you recall...
Oh, wait a minute, no, I think you got medically examined there. And if you weren't, right, you... No, I think they had it there, because I know, yes, because there's a friend of mine who got sent back because he wasn't... Something wrong with him.
Obviously, no.
Oh, no.